But I find it very challenging to put it into practice.
Yes.
Consistently.
Yes.
So my challenge is the consistency part.
Yeah.
When my awareness comes, that motor kicked in.
Yeah.
But I find it so challenging to do this consistency. So I was wondering if you can give me some insights.
It's a thing of habit.
Habit.
Yeah. Because from Buddhist, we would say beginningless time, we have this habit of seeking happiness from external things. So when we finally start thinking about it and using reason and thinking, you know, that doesn't make much sense to continue doing that. But then when you have this strong energy habit, just the thought of, I should change, is going to make it easy. Wham, bango, you know. So it's a thing of rehabituating ourselves.
Rehabituating.
Yeah.
So part of the process is it kind of, instead of me looking at my thinking with my mind, I shift to a kind of cultivating my conscious state.
Instead of thinking?
Yeah, instead of just the mind, because the mind is just controls how I work on things, right? And the way I think about, if I move into a intuition maybe, intuitively doing certain things, a certain state of consciousness that actually elevates beyond the mind.
Yeah. Buddhism looks at the mind a little bit different. Yeah. And we would say, for example, if you understand something using reasons, at first you understand it here, but you have to move it down here. You know, it's what you would call making it intuitive. We just, you know, say it, you start with understanding it intellectually, and then you have to keep thinking about it and reaffirming the reasoning and why you came to that conclusion,
right.
And then apply it in your daily life as best as you can. And sometimes you're successful in applying it, and sometimes you blow it. Yeah. But this is how we have to change, you know, a lot of these mental habits.
Yes.
Because it's by changing the mind that then you start to change the speech and the physical actions.
Yeah, so I think to your point, mental habits, and these mental habits were actually probably created and cultivated over decades.
Yeah.
So
even longer.
Even longer. So I just want to get your insights in terms of how could I start to unpack that, other than, you know, practicing it on a regular basis. Because to your point, if I can't internalize it.
No, it's by practicing it on a regular basis.
That's it. That's the hack.
But going over why you think this and the reasons again and again. Making examples from your life, making examples from what you see around you, so that you're shifting your mind in terms of, you know, where you see happiness comes from. Yeah? And then as you shift your mind, then it's easier to act and speak accordingly. But you have to keep practicing. It's like, you know, if you have a kid who says, you know, I want to learn to speak French. Yeah. How do you practice French? I mean, how do you learn French? You have to go.
You have to ask me.
Yeah, you have to ask him. Yeah. And then you have to learn the las and the les and the, you know, all this stuff. And then when you start to speak, you say the wrong pronunciation, you use the wrong word, so it sounds like it's coming out, you're saying something different. And it's only by doing it and learning from doing and people helping you as you're doing.
Okay, so it's a process you just need to go through.
Yeah. We always want something quick, cheap, and easy.
That's the human in me.
We have to break that habit of wanting quick, cheap, and easy.
That's a good point.
Yeah?
Yeah, I hear you. Thank you so much. I just need to take leave.
Okay. You want to take a quick photograph? Do you include that before you go?
Yeah.
We could all stand behind Venerable.
I'll ask the
Okay.
And We brought with us mani pills that are, they're blessed. They have relic substances and, you know, things that are good for you. And then they're blessed by the whole community in Dharamsala. People reciting Om Mani Padme Hum, the mantra of great compassion, to bless it. And so we brought some of the pills and the sheets to tell you how to use them.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And a small invitation to come visit the Abbey.
Yeah.
Oh, anytime?
This is any time of the year?
Yes, okay, wonderful.
Whenever you like.
Thank you so much.
Do we have more of the sheets?
Yeah, yeah. They want to do a group photo, though. I'm just giving it to her because she's moving right now.
Oh, okay. Nobody else gets it.
No, later on, later on.
Take a few. It's free.
1, 2, 3.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And
bye. We'll be in touch.
Yeah.
Do it at the end, but I need to get back to
So maybe just one or two more questions.
Sure.
And then we will head out as well.
Yes.
I thought of my question.
Okay.
How do we let go of our attachment to pain?
To play?
To pain.
Pain. You mean, give me an example, like, oh, my leg hurts, oh, poor me.
Because, like, when we think about our attachment to happiness, a lot of it also comes because we enjoy, I think, the expectation and anticipation of disappointment.
Oh, you mean people who always have a negative mind state?
Mm. Because recently I've been working with a lot of, like, this year I work with a lot of young people and also, like, some middle-aged people, and I realized that they're very attached to the concept of pain. And it's also very difficult to ask them.
What do you mean they're attached? What does that look like? What are they saying?
It looks like depression. It looks like hopelessness.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's much more hopelessness,
correct.
Depression, Yeah. Well, sometimes it's chemical with the brain, so you have to check that out. Okay, and then you have to see, like, what the young people, what are they getting depressed about? And I think, personally speaking, when the society has this idea of you must always be happy, and happiness should just come to you, and so... Yeah, then I should always be happy. Well, how come I'm not? Yeah, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with the world?
But which comes first? Does happiness come before hope? Or does hope come before happiness?
I think optimism. Yeah, there's something there. I think with some kids, I know in the States, in... communities where there's a lot of poverty and violence and so on, the kids don't see a future for themselves because they look at the lives of the adults. And, you know, in those communities, maybe some of the adult, the fathers aren't in the family, a parent may be in jail, maybe a drug addict. So a kid who's in raised in that kind of, or lives in that kind of community, what do they see as a future for them? Nothing, just doing what the adults do, taking drugs, you know, maybe robbing people, you get thrown in prison, so I think that for that community, But then you have the kids who come from really wealthy families, and there the expectation is you've got to be better than number one. Not just you have to be first, you have to be better than that person. And I know in some school districts in the States, in those kind of wealthy communities, actually there's a more incidence of drugs and suicide, actually, you know, because there's so much pressure on me to be so good and to make a lot of money. I got to make a lot of money. I've got to be athletic. I've got to be very physically attractive. I've got to this and I've got to that. And hey, wait, this is just too much pressing on me. Yeah. So I think that, you know, the culture in those communities creates kind of depression too. You know, how can I ever live up to what my parents want me to be?
So how do we work towards a society where we are more free of that kind of...
Yeah. Well, then you have to start changing the parents. And to change the parents, you have to change their parents. And you have to change the whole way society thinks. So I see it very much as really learning to look at what society says, learning to look at the conditioning from your family. And when you're a little kid, you just take it all in because you're a little kid and you believe what adults say and do, and you don't have the powers to think about it. When you get older, that's the time to really stop and think about everything I've seen around me, you know, the models of whether they're good or bad, of what I can become, whatever values people hold on what they think I should be. How much of that do I believe? Yeah, so to really assess from your society, you know, with your own intelligence, what do I believe and what don't I believe? Yeah, and this may shake up the family a little bit, but that's okay. Yeah?
I think I'm just curious because I noticed that when we talk about changing the parents and the society, they tend to have a very closed mind and they prefer to... I think it's really about getting stuck in a attached state of...
You mean the kids have a closed mind?
The kids, the parents, the sister.
Everybody.
Yeah,
because everybody gets used to something. One person who was depressed when he was telling me that there's something very comfortable about being depressed because you know what tomorrow is going to be like. You're going to be miserable. Yeah. But you know what tomorrow is going to be like. Yeah? And I thought, ugh. But, you know, this was his experience. Yeah? So I think it's also with young people saying, you know, it doesn't have to be like that. You know, you can create your own future. You need to look at what is your talent and what do you want to give to society. And I think a lot of stuff happens because we think, they think, we should be a certain way. So it's, we're guessing what they're guessing we should be. It's ridiculous. Yeah. So it doesn't matter what they think I should be. I have to look and see, you know, what I can offer, what I'm interested in, what I'm good at doing, what brings me joy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Next, me for the
question.
Yeah.
venerable, for the seniors.
The
seniors, elderly.
More mature.
You mean like my age group?
Our age group.
I think you're younger than me. I am more wrinkles than you. I am more gray hairs. Okay.
No,
yeah.
More or less same range. Yeah, so it's one progresses in life stages.
Yes.
Not our priorities, our look in life, change.
Mm-hmm.
So, one thing for sure is the inevitable consequences of aging,
yep,
as applied to the physical body become much more apparent, you know,
yep,
in later life stages than, you know, when younger. So my question is that, what would you advise as one ages with regards to living and life, and in particular, you know, the Buddhist way of life, the ethics, the values, the philosophies, how would that better apply in this life stage? And conversely, how can a person be a better Buddhist at this life stage?
Yeah. Learning, thinking about it, meditating. Yeah. I've just, yeah, if the Buddhist values, the Buddhist worldview, it's quite interesting. You know, if you start learning Buddhism and applying it to your life, you never get bored. Yeah. Because, yeah, the way our mind works is sometimes very interesting. Sometimes it's a bit crazy. Like, very often it's a bit crazy. But you learn to laugh at yourself. Yeah. And, yeah, you just go to teachings, come home, think about the teachings. Yeah. There's a whole kind of meditation that we call analytic meditation, where you think about the teachings. There's points to think about. And personally speaking, I find that very, very helpful.
Trying to rationalize and...
Yeah, it's not just intellectually, you know. It's more like really looking closely at your experience, looking closely at what the Buddha said, applying that to your own life, you know, applying what you're teaching. For example, okay, I was thinking about His Holiness Dalai Lama one time at a talk, was talking about the joy of being compassionate. And often people don't think of being compassionate as joyful. They think of it as like, oh God, I'm taking on everybody's suffering. And now I'm suffering too. And I've got to change their suffering, but they won't change. And, oh, yeah, you know what I mean.
I'm feeling guilty of it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and His Holiness says, well, sometimes that attitude comes about because you're wanting something from the people that you're helping.
Mm.
You know, you give a gift to somebody and then you expect a thank you. Yeah, you give somebody a present and you, for their birthday, you expect one for your own birthday. Yeah. So often in our ways of being with people, there's this transactional thing of it's like I scratch your back, you scratch my back.
Yeah.
But in personal relationships too, yeah. Why do I like you? Because you do things that make me feel good. And especially because you tell me how wonderful I am. Yeah? Don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when are you going to start? Yeah, you?
Mm.
Yeah, no. No. So, okay, so, you know, we're always wanting, you know, if I give somebody a gift, I want to thank you. I want to give back. If I'm nice to somebody, I expect them to do a favor for me. Okay? So there's these kinds of expectations in society. And if we don't get what we're expecting, you know, I do something nice. You don't say thank you. I gave you a present and you gave it away to somebody else right in front of me. My teacher did that one time. It was a good lesson, I tell you. So, you know, then it's like, oh, they aren't. You give somebody good advice and they say, nah, leave me alone. So what His Holiness was saying was, when you have a mind of compassion that wants to be of benefit and service to others, then whatever you do, the joy comes from doing it, not from receiving something. Okay, so let's say, you know, your school teacher, she was, you know, before. So you teach kids, yeah, and, you know, some learn and some don't learn and whatever. And then they go on to a next class and they forget all about you and they grow up and they don't write you on, you know, National Teachers Celebration Day. But you poured a lot of your life energy into them. And it kind of be nice, you know, if they came back after a year and said, Mrs. Pond, you know, you changed my life in second grade, you know, but they don't. So if you're expecting that, you're miserable. But if your joy is just in teaching the kids and thinking I'm giving something to them and it's freely given and whatever they do with it is okay, then just the act of giving is something that you feel, that makes you feel happy. Yeah. So if I can give the example in terms of a physical object, yeah, but this is also goes for social relationships too, is when I lived in India one time, I made a few book covers for my teacher by hand stitching, you know, and I made beautiful brocade book covers. I was so proud of them. They were really beautiful, hand stitched. And I went in and, you know, I made an offering and I gave them to him and we chatted a few minutes and then I left. And so I'm standing outside and a friend of my teacher's, another Geshe, goes into the room and they're talking, I guess. Anyway, a few minutes later, that Geshe comes out and he's carrying the book covers that I gave my teacher. Okay, so, you know, my first reaction would be, that's my gift, and you gave my gift away, which means that you don't like me, you don't care about me. Yeah. Okay, so I stop and look. Okay, somebody gave that, you know, he gave that to somebody else. Does that mean he doesn't like me, that he doesn't care about me? No. I am not in that gift, and the fact that he gave it away doesn't mean that he's cutting a relationship with me. In fact, it may mean that he really liked it and he wanted to have his friend to have it. I don't know why he gave it away. Yeah, but if I'm attached to this thing of, you know, I want to see him use that book cover when he's coming, when he next teaches and when he unwraps his text, I want him to say, Tubden children, you know, stitch this beautiful book cover for me. If I wanted that kind of stuff, I'm going to be miserable. Yeah. And my gift wasn't even pure because I'm sitting there wanting something in return. But if I'm just happy to give, yeah, then whatever they do with it, it's fine. So you help somebody, you know, in what you're doing. And some kids you get through to, and some kids, they're not ready yet. Yeah. But if you take joy in your job, yeah, and you rejoice at being able to do that, and then you may see this, you know, change in the people over time.
I think in my case, it's the system. The system is frustrating.
Yes.
The kids are fine.
Yeah.
But the system is excruciatingly frustrating.
Right, yes. And get used to it. Systems are frustrating.
So giving back to the system is... I'm working on it.
Yeah. Now give back to the kids.
I do. But we also need the system, so it's a complex relationship.
Yeah. Maybe you give some of your ideas to the system.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do that.
Okay. Yeah.
So is all this thing, you know, don't look at it as permanent. Don't you attach all this in preparation for the next stage of life?
Not looking at things as permanent.
But because everybody has.
Yeah.
Everybody pass on.
Yeah.
So what we do is to help us to pass on the next life? Or, so how does one prepare to pass on?
To prepare to die.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's one thing that that Nagarjuna was telling the king. Give your stuff away before you die. It doesn't mean you have to give everything away and move out and sit on the streets. You know. But, you know, be generous and give things and take pleasure in seeing other people have what you know, have that. And then when you die, you're not attached to those things. Because what makes death difficult is we don't want to separate from our money and our possessions. We don't want to separate from our loved ones. We don't want to even separate from this body. And yet we have to. Yeah.
But if you have no attachment, does that give the person a better rebirth? Or how does it work?
Yeah, when you have less attachment, it doesn't mean that you're just like, oh, I have no attachment, I don't care about anything. No, it doesn't mean apathy. You know, when you give up the attachment, then you can look at things in a much clearer way and say, what is beneficial?
But does that result in a better rebirth?
If you if you practice generosity, if you practice ethical conduct, if instead of getting angry and trashing somebody, you practice fortitude, if you practice those things, you're going to be a happier person now, and those actions themselves are considered virtuous. They leave the seeds of good karma on your mind stream. When you have a lot of merit, a lot of good karma on your mind stream at the end of your life, then you're much more relaxed dying, you know. And if you've familiarized yourself with the idea that you're going to die, yeah, then when it comes time to die, you look back.
For it.
You expect it. You look back on your life. You say, that was a life well lived. I learned a lot. I made a lot of mistakes, but I learned. I was generous. I kept good ethical conduct. Yeah.
So, Venerable, you talk about mind stream, right? The way you were talking just now. It's almost like you accumulate your merits and you move them from life to life.
Yeah.
So how do they, like, translate? Across the lives.
How do they go from one life to the other?
The continuum.
Yeah. the mind stream is just one moment of clarity and awareness that causes the next moment, that causes the next moment, that causes the next moment. So there's no soul or Atman that carries the
current. There's no what?
Soul.
There's no soul.
There's no soul.
Then how does it go from life to life?
Because the mind stream is changing every moment. If you have a permanent soul that cannot change, something that cannot change cannot perform a function.
No, but you have to have continuity. So you have to have an idea.
But that's
identity,
what I mean.
Right? No?
Oh, that's a big question in Buddhism. You're saying you have to have something that really is you, unchanging, permanent, doesn't change. Yeah? That is really you.
But so how do you know that the next stream is your stream, and you know how does it work?
That it doesn't get all mixed up. Yeah, because it's one stream of mind produces another stream. If you take an example of a river, okay, I don't know, Singapore River.
Yeah,
we have rivers.
Yeah, you have rivers. Okay. So you have a Singapore River.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So Singapore River. Okay. Is the water upstream the same as the water downstream?
No.
No, it's different water, isn't it? Is there a continuity between the upstream river and the downstream river?
Wait a minute.
What's the answer?
Yes.
Yes, there's a continuity.
Okay.
Does the water that's upstream, will it go downstream?
Yes.
Will it be exactly the same water as was upstream?
No.
No.
Yes,
but there's a continuity of Singapore River. Even though the river's changing, the water's changing, if you drop a leaf upstream in the river,
mm-hmm.
okay, and that river is going to carry that leaf around down,
mm-hmm.
yeah. It'll change the leaf a little bit as, you know, the water affects the leaf, yeah. When it gets down here, you know, maybe what happens? It grows a flower in it, you know. If the idea is, you know, something's planted here and it will bring a result down there.
But it's the same leaf that bloom.
Is it the same leaf? If it's the exact same leaf, it means nothing in that leaf has changed. It means that the electrons going around the atoms of the leaf are frozen. They don't move. In fact, they don't go around the atom because they can't move. It means that the leaf will never decay. It means that it'll be exactly the same when it's dropped in the water as when it gets to the end. But it's not. It's changing every moment. And yet there's a continuity of what comes before that comes late, you know, goes later.
Mm.
Very good. So there's no IP life stream there.
There's no IP.
ID.
Identity.
No identity.
Yeah.
No. Social security number.
Yeah.
Okay. So when we talk about, you know, having good karma, do the
mm-hmm.
karma positive actions in this life,
mm-hmm.
and next life, maybe less suffering, better rebirth.
Yeah.
But given this, you have just life stream, which
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what it is,
there's no soul.
Pop. So we, cannot identify, so good or bad, it becomes
irrelevant.
The feeling of I, yeah, when you were 2 years old, you had a feeling of I. Now you have a feeling I, the capital I. Are you the same person as the two-year-old?
No.
Thank goodness, no.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah?
But there's a continuity. And even though the two-year-old said I, and or I don't, you know, said King Hua.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're King Hua here,
yeah.
You're King Hua there.
Yeah.
Are the two King Huas the same?
No.
No.
But
that's
the
okay.
Same, it's the same identity, except it's evolved.
Yeah.
Right?
No, what's the identity?
It's King Hua.
But he could have been called Hua King instead. Yeah, your identity isn't your name.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to have one thing that is your identity? I mean, if you think... When you're a baby, the adjectives used to describe you are very different than the ones describing you when you're an adult. Yeah.
But
there's
but his question is relevant because if you, you know, they always say that if you do good in this life, you get a better next life. But if there's no identity and there's nothing, right?
No,
it really
it's because there's no identity. Because if you were a permanent person, permanent means it does not change at all from one moment to the next. If you are a permanent person, you could never experience tasting a good lunch and having the pleasure of eating a good lunch because you change when you eat lunch. And a person who is permanent, a permanent identity, cannot change at all.
Why so? So why do you change as you eat lunch? That part I don't really understand.
Why do we change simply because
the experience changes?
Yeah,
the experience changes, but causes produce results. One thing: this table fixed? With totally permanent, not changing one moment to the next. No, it's changing one moment to the next. It looks the same, but we know that the electrons are moving, the atoms are moving. We also know that even though we don't see it, it's slowly falling apart. Yeah? Maybe these are eroding. Maybe a bug is starting to chip away at this. Slowly, everything is changing. And at some time, if you just leave this here, even if nobody touches it, at some point, it's just going to collapse and fall apart.
It's like aging, right?
Yeah.
So on that note, about impermanence.
Yes.
We do have to go.
Yeah.
What comes together must part.
Yeah. So,